or at patreon.com/thechildrenshour.
Or ask your smart speaker to play the Children's Hour podcast.
We post our photos and more on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Find us at TCH Radio.
Our theme music is written by C.K. Bylow.
The Children's Hour is distributed by the Children's Hour Incorporated, PRX, and the Pacifica Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Support for the Dirtbag and KBOO Community Radio comes from our members and from One Green World, a family-owned and operated nursery off Southeast Foster on 134th Avenue in Portland, providing a selection of fruiting trees, vines, shrubs, and vegetables and supplies. More information is available at onegreenworld.com.
This is KBOO in Portland.
I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging. Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging.
It's a... Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Welcome to The Dirtbag, a program dedicated to edible gardening and with the notion in mind that while we may be able to speed up nature and change nature, that we can't improve it. However, improving this show is my cohort, Jim Gilbert.
Good morning, Glenn. And, you know, it's amazing. We are actually sitting in the same location together for the first time in a year and a half.
We are not, however, in the studio. We are in the kitchen of the house at one of our program underwriters, One Green World, here on, what is it, Southeast Portland, 134th or something
it's
like
just,
that?
It's just south of Foster on 134th Street.
That's it.
Yep.
And making this all happen is our ace sound engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. You can find more information at bergmanproductions.com. Joe, thank you. Joe even has his own mic because we're getting him involved today.
And I should just say, I've worked with Joe for years, and if you want somebody to do video work for you or audio work or still photography, he's a great resource for it, his company.
And he even is able to perform marriage ceremonies. No, that's not correct. Jumps out behind the camera and runs up there and says, okay, married.
Right. Right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Joe has been a lifesaver through the last year and a half, and it's been fun. Joe's a great guy, and it'd be fun for you to work with him, too. BergmanProductions.com. Okay, we've got a full show, and we even have the listener mailbag. We got a question, and we got answers from last month's garden stumper, which is, what is the only fruit that has seeds on the outside? Well, we learned a few things here, but we actually have three answers, and they all were correct, and they all kind of got more better, if you will.
I'm not sure about that, Glenn.
Well, they just became more accurate.
More accurate.
Yeah. Yes. And finally, sounds like a real botanist guy wrote in and says, well, just wait a minute here. You guys aren't exactly correct. You're correct, but you're not exactly correct. Yeah. So we'll start out with that. We will talk about the record heat. Boy, let's hope that never happens again in our lifetimes. It's unlikely, but whew. And what we can do in the aftermath, because it seems like berries, actually the fruiting plants and the fruit themselves, in the small bushes took a hit. Not so much the tree fruit.
Yeah, we've noticed that the tree fruit at our place is pretty much okay.
Yeah.
But boy, berries like currants and blueberries and gooseberries.
And just the raspberries that were in the full sun and the blackberries.
Yeah.
Took a hit. So we'll give you our take on that. We will also, at half past the hour, have a new garden stumper, which will be not an easy one, but an easy one to answer. Let's just put it that way, huh?
Hmm. Okay.
Not like the strawberry one, is what I'm saying here.
That's right. We don't require a botanist to do this.
That's right. Yeah. And then we'll talk about summer pruning. It's the time, July and August is the time to do summer pruning, which is my preferred time of pruning, just more better weather, if you will. And it's, if you want to keep the tree the way it is now, it's better to prune in the summer, the size that it is now. We'll also try to hit some watering options during a drought, which is what we have. No real restrictions here yet in the Portland area, but there could be.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. Also, what's annoying me this month, and Joe, our sound engineer, will be taking care of the Dirtbag Dictionary. So let's start with the mailbag. First of all, we'll answer the question from last month. What is the only fruit that has seeds on the outside? Well, like I said, the first one, and I will be contacting these people, and they will get a free hand tool sharpening at Coley Farm Store, about the corner of Northeast 42nd and Alberta Street. So the first recipient will be Victoria, who wrote in with the answer, strawberries.
Right on, Victoria.
Yep, that's it. So she gets a sharpening at the Coley Farm Store. And the second person who wrote in, he said, and I should have looked out how to pronounce this, Achene strawberry or Achene, A-C-H-E-N-E. Do you know how that's pronounced?
I don't know. I've never said it before.
Yeah. And when you... So that is Paul. And I'll email Paul to let him know that he has a free sharpening coming. And it makes more sense when we get to Matthew, our third recipient of a tool sharpening. I'm just going to read his email here. The question was, what is the only fruit with its seeds on the outside? I believe you're referring to the strawberry. However, technically, the red berry is not a true berry, and the yellow specks on the outside of the red deliciousness are the real fruit. He puts these in quotes. Strawberries are aggregate fruits, grouped with blackberries and raspberries in the rosacea family. The red part is actually called the receptacle, and the yellow specks are called the achenes, or spelled achenes. Inside the achenes are the actual tiny seeds. So the seeds are inside the achenes, held on the outside of the receptacle. Whatever you call it, it's delicious. And I cannot... I'll mention here that... I'll go on here. He says, thanks for your great show. I am an avid listener and appreciate your work. So that's Matthew. Pretty thorough.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, he actually wrote another email, which I didn't write down here, that he talked about. Actually, there are some other fruits too, like yews, which is not really a fruit, but the berries on the fruit. So anyway, that was a good response.
Yeah.
And we'll have another garden stumper at half past the hour. And if you have the answer to that, you can send us an email at thedirtbag@kabu.org. But that'll be coming up at half past the hour.
And we love to hear from you. Even if you don't have an answer, just say hi.
Well, we did hear from somebody who did have a question, a gardening question. And the subject on his email was hot summer gardening with clay soil?
Mm-hmm.
And his message, help, I couldn't even get many starts from seed this year. Had 3 weeks of good strawberries, then wham, heat killed my plants. It's tough when we can't question him to know exactly what he's after here or what his situation is. But Jim and I will agree that clay soil is generally not the problem if it has enough organic matter in the soil. And that's hard to do. But clay soil is generally pretty nutritious.
It holds nutrients, it holds water in the right conditions. I mean, you can, clay soil can be also in like a wet, you know, a wetland or somewhere where you have water all the time, which is not good. But the soil itself, clay soil, is not in itself a bad soil.
And when you have, we'll just do a little soil analysis here. We have essentially three types of soil. The clay particles, which are very, very small. And not only are they very, very small, but they're kind of like platelets. So they're flat. And so when they're very squished together or packed together, they just, you know, it's hard to get a shovel through, much less water. And then we have silt, which is a medium-sized soil particle, if you will. And then sand, which is the biggest particle, which is actually pretty big compared to clay. And if you were going to be cursed with a soil type, what would you guess that would be?
None of the above.
Well,
just joking.
Yeah. Sand would be your worst nightmare, because not only does it not hold water very well, but it doesn't hold nutrients very well.
Right.
And so, you know, silt probably are your best bet. But having clay is not bad at all, because you can remedy that, although it takes, you know, more than a year by amending it with organic matter, which could be compost or composted manure, or I guess that's it.
Yeah, the most difficult clay soils are ones where they haven't been cultivated properly and just been exhausted by constant harvesting of some crop or another, and so there's nothing really left in it except just the soil.
Yes.
And that's the worst ones.
And the soil condition can be exacerbated by unneeded rototilling. If you don't need to rototill, don't. And my raised garden beds, well, let's see here. I've been at my place in Northeast Portland for, well, it's, we passed my anniversary, 34 years.
Wow.
And most of my garden beds haven't been hand-turned or rototilled in 20 to 25 years, because they just don't need it, you know. But I'm constantly adding organic matter. But I'm not rototilling it in. I'm just putting it on the surface of the soil and letting the natural microorganisms incorporate it.
And do you know what kind of soil you have of those three categories?
Well, it's a mix now. And I know this because I've done a quick and dirty soil test. Did you get that? Quick and dirty? yeah. Where's our sound effects, man? Joe? we're not recording, which we have been doing from our separate homes, but Joe's probably has his home recording. He probably could give up a percussion hi-hat.
Or hand clap.
Yeah. Bada boom. But anyway, you can put a cup of soil, you know, whatever cup you want, in a quart jar. Add maybe 2 or 3 cups of 2 to 3 cups of water, and then a dash or a dribble of dishwashing detergent to break down the surface tension, and just shake it for a minute or two, and then let it sit, and the clay will settle out at the bottom. Or no, it'll float to the top because it's very light. And the sand will settle to the bottom along with rocks and whatnot, and then the silt, and then the clay. And if you let it sit for a week, the clay will settle out, and you'll get a pretty good delineation of what your breakdown is.
That's interesting. I'm not familiar with that. So basically, the coarser material will be at the bottom, and the fine will be at the top.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, that's a great test.
Yeah. So it, you know, doesn't really tell you exactly what you've got, but tells you what you're working with.
Sure.
So anyway, our writer, David, you know, our first recommendation would be to make sure you're adding organic matter every year. And if it's a newer soil, which it sounds like it may be here, you very well may want to turn it in into the soil. Yeah. Oh, one other way that you can improve the tilth of your soil, which is the kind of the physical condition of your soil, would be to plant a cover crop in the fall. and you can grow organic matter into the root zone where you want it.
Now, I highly recommend that. That's great. We've really improved our soil as a nursery by doing that every year.
Yeah. Well, the key is just to add it every year, because the organic matter disappears. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just saying that it disappears. It doesn't really disappear. It gets eaten by the microorganisms.
Nope.
So it's food.
I could be remembering this incorrectly, but it seems to me many years ago, a friend of mine told me that it takes nature 100 years to create an inch of topsoil.
That wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah.
I think I've heard similar sentiments.
Yeah, so we're going to accelerate that process.
Yes, we certainly can. Yeah. Every year, though, add it, you know, at 1 to 3 inches of organic matter.
Yeah.
So even if you're growing,
I'm not sure if I mentioned last show, but this past winter we planted triticale, which is a cross of rye and wheat, with common vetch, and the vetch grew up onto the triticale, and the triticale grew, and it got to be about 4 to 5 feet tall. And it was the best, the densest and most healthy looking and happiest cover crop we've ever done.
And you know what that reminds me of? It might have been the best deer food you've ever offered up either. Didn't you have a problem with deer?
They really prefer cherry and plum leaves.
Oh, okay. I thought it might be an answer to your deer question, about your fencing there. Is your fencing complete now?
The fence is done, but it's not impermeable, as we have discovered. At least the fence, we've had deer inside the fence. We're not sure how they're getting in. We're working on it.
Okay.
And it's crazy. And deer are definitely a plague for us this year.
Well, we'll finish up the rest of David's question here about that he couldn't get many seeds. No, I can't quite make out what he means here. I couldn't even get many starts from seed this year. You know, was he seeding the seeds right directly into the clay soil, and so they didn't germinate? Well, that wouldn't surprise me, because they could have just rotted at that point. I mean, you need good drainage for seeds.
Yeah, it's hard to know what the conditions are happening. We have a garden out at the nursery. We have a community garden for all the employees too. And I looking at it yesterday, it's the most productive, incredible productive garden I've ever seen.
You know, this heat, which we're going to get to here soon, seemed to be very good for squash.
Mm-hmm.
Those plants are just exploding.
Yeah,
and the tomatoes seem fine. I mean, there's some burnt leaves, but anyway. We'll get to that after we talk about our plant of the month. So once again, if you have a gardening question that Jim and I can go back and forth and spend a lot of time talking about, send it to us at thedirtbag@kboo.org, and we'll answer it on the next program.
And one quick comment: when you were doing the introduction, Glenn, and you were talking about what our purpose here is, a little phrase I like to repeat now and then is that you can't digitize food.
True.
And so you know, there's a lot of interest right now in growing fruit and vegetables, and I think it's just totally right on, because you know, there's nothing better to put on your table than some delicious fresh thing from your garden.
That's right. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
To help you with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our plant of the month is a quick look at the difference between winter and summer pears. And I think growing them is always the same. I mean, the same growing conditions, pruning, disease control, staking or not staking. It's the harvesting that kind of separates the two.
Yes.
So one of the, probably the, I don't know, around here anyway, probably the most common pear grown is Bartlett. Yes?
Yes.
I mean,
and we would call that a summer pear.
A summer pear, right, yeah. Because it gets harvested and after it, and maybe we'll talk more about this next month, because pears, maybe all pears, I'm not sure, should be harvested when they're unripe and then let them ripen off the tree. They, you know, they're edible when they're ripening on the tree. I mean, I've had Bartlett's right off the tree, but or off the ground maybe. But it's better if they're a better tasting, better texture, sweeter if they're ripened off the tree. They get mealy if they ripen on the tree. Yes.
Well, you know, like a Bartlett will fall, when it gets fully ripe, it falls off the tree. By then, it has almost like water core in the center, and it's uh-huh. not very poor quality. So, as we've talked about, I think probably some listeners remember us talking about harvesting pears before, pick them up, lift the pear on the tree, and when it comes off in your hand, you know, easily, it's ready to go, and then it's still firm.
I did an experiment when I was harvesting some winter pears, which the pear in question here was the Anjou. Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, why do I say Anjou rather than d'Anjou? Because isn't it really the Anjou? Does it have a D apostrophe in front of it, or is that two different types?
No, I think you're correct. It does have that D in front of it, but, you know, language changes for convenience purposes. So all the pear growers that I know in the Hood River Valley, for example, it's all Anjou.
Anjou, not Anjou.
Well, you know,
it's French, yes. Okay, yeah, my right. fake There's French accent.
We're Hood River, you know, we're not Paris.
Well, that's true. Joe would have had, you know, if we'd been in the home studio, he would have had the accordion music. There we go. Boy, we could really
have some fun with this.
Yes, we could. Yeah. More fun.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, what are some other examples of some winter pears? I mentioned the Anjou or Anjou for us Anglophiles.
Yeah, and it's probably certainly one of the most common ones that is grown here in our area. I mean,
there's also Bosque.
Yeah.
That's a winter pear, and the oh geez, it was on the tip of my tongue. We don't really have very good growing weather for them here. Comice,
right.
Right. But Hood River and the Dalles.
And South Medford.
Yeah.
Grow a lot of comice.
Just a different climate.
Yeah. Yeah, they like the hot, dry, a little bit drier climate than we have. But I mean, and you know, there's like the Anjou I would call it extreme winter pear, because it doesn't, you pick it, you keep it cold.
Mm-hmm.
In a cool place for a month and a half or more, then it ripens. So most times you don't eat Anjou till it's like December or January.
Yeah,
where Bosque and Comice are earlier. They're kind of, to me, almost like a hybrid between a summer and winter pear. They're not like severe extreme winter pear.
So some of these, especially the Anjou, needs this cold storage.
That's right.
For a month, like Jim was talking about. The others maybe not so much, right. But I think they still benefit from it, but maybe not as long.
Yeah.
And they certainly, you know, need to be harvested before November, December.
Yes. Yes, of course.
You know, September generally, probably. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I know my Anjou, I'll harvest the end of August or middle to end of August. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to tell you about the experiment that happened I did was, you know, I'm lifting them, cradling them in my hand and picking them, and, you know, they come off pretty easily. Well, some of them don't. And I'm determined I'm going to pick it anyway. And sometimes then it will rip the spur off and it'll keep the little leaf on there. Well, that's my experiment. I left the leaf on to see, well, how does this pear compare? As for ripening, as were the other ones that came off easily. No difference. Hmm. It was still good.
Oh, interesting.
Still good, yeah.
So they were basically all ripe, just some weren't as easy to come off at that moment than
Correct.
The others.
Yeah. So I don't worry so much about it if I'm reaching and I'm not going to come back and pick that pair again there. So
Well, that's good to know. I mean, you think about what's expedient. You know, are you going to be able to come back every day and test all those pears again?
No. You're right. So all right, that's our, you know, our quick look at for our plant of the month, you know, winter versus summer pears.
And it's also just worthy to mention, of course, Glenn, is that there's the Asian pear.
Well, yes,
and it's a little, Asian pears are a little different because they don't ripen off the tree.
Yeah, it's a different genus too, isn't it? I mean, it's just
Pyrus.
Still Pyrus.
Yeah.
All right, but they're not.
Don't ask me.
They're different.
Yeah. Pyrus pyrifolia, I believe, is common pear. and I don't remember the Latin name of Asian pear.
Yeah.
But yeah, they best with Asian pears, which will be ripening, starting to ripen, you know, fairly soon.
Yes.
The early ones, the best quality is when they come off, and they come off easily. But when they do that, they're ripe and ready to eat. They're not going to benefit from sitting around.
So Asian pear is you know a third, and completely different in that we harvest those. They don't ripen off the tree,
right.
Not at all. So
that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Just like blueberries.
Yes.
Well, okay, before we get into our next segment about the record Heat, let's take our first musical break. And this all has to do with burn.
Mm.
Can we understand why? Indeed we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whew.
All right.
All right. Anyway, our first one is from Coco Taylor from her CD Royal Blue. And this tune is called Fuel to Burn. Bit of Coco Taylor's Fuel to Burn, unfortunately. This is The Dirt Bag. This is Glenn Andreessen along with Jim Gilbert and our ace sound engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. We will spend a few moments now talking about the aftermath. You know, what do we do now from the 2 weeks ago hot weather that we had?
Buy an electric car.
Boy, so kind of speechless here.
Yeah, it's kind of a reminder of how important it is to really take seriously the climate change and us human beings and how we deal with it. I've talked to people who in the past were sort of skeptical about all that, and a couple of different people who were that way have now were telling me that we need to do a better job of taking care of the earth. That was encouraging, actually,
yeah,
to hear that.
If they go out and get vaccinated now.
That would be another thing to do, wouldn't it?
Well, another thing that it reminds me of is just how easy kind of we've had it here for gardening. You know,
yes.
We don't really have, you know, high, hot, extended temperatures. I mean, it's getting more and more these days, but, you know, it's been gardening paradise. And if, you know, if you had temperatures above 100, I think I read that in last year in Phoenix that over half the days there the temperature was over 100 of the 365.
Crazy.
Something like that. Yeah, so obviously, I mean, you'd think, well, if you had enough water, you know, could you grow these things? And now I can empathize with gardeners in other parts of the, even Oregon, you know, Bend, where it gets so hot and so cold.
Yeah. There have been a lot of unusual events this year weather-wise in the past year. I mean, just here in the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. In a sense, we've had three natural disasters in 1 year. I mean, we never had fires like we had.
Well, the conditions just came together to create this heat dome along with the wind and whatnot, and then same with the fires, you know. They just had that unusual strong east wind right after the fire started.
Yep. Yeah, I burned up an entire log deck out of the sawmill by behind our nursery, and then we had the ice storm, which was 11 days without electricity. Yeah. I mean, that's just so unheard of for us. And like you said, I mean, Oregon was, I kind of thought it was a refuge from some of this stuff, but here we have 100, we had 112 at our nursery 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
It's even hotter in Portland. That's like 8 degrees higher than I've ever, in the 40 years I've lived there, than I've ever experienced.
I've never had, 116 in Portland.
It's just like, off the charts. It's like, so what suffered?
Well,
besides us.
Well, our plant, certain plants really took a beating, as we mentioned, at least in my garden. You know, the raspberries that were above the fence where they got the heat, they're just, brown, the leaves. It didn't kill the plants, the new growth, the primacanes that are growing that will have fruit on them next year are still alive. I noticed that some are putting out new green shoots. Continue to water things. If there's any doubt that whether they're alive or not, err on the side of they might be okay. Just give them water. That'd be my advice based on what I've seen in my garden. The tree fruits seem to be fine. I had a little bit of burning leaves on the fig tree, but I've got some desert kings that are I thought I should pick one just to see how close it is to being ripe. But they're on the tree, they're on the ground. I don't know if the squirrels are knocking them off or,
oh, really?
Or what. But I don't know. What's your take?
Well, on the Desert King, for example, they aren't ripe at our place yet. But we've had, not only were those temperatures so high during that heat wave, but in general, the days following it were, so we were talking about like 92 being a new normal.
Yeah.
This is like cool weather now.
Right.
It was pretty darn warm still. So I think this year the fruit that's on the trees will ripen earlier than usual. I mean, mm-hmm. It just seems like inevitable because even the evenings were warmer than normal. So,
well, I follow the bloom cycles, not just of edible plants, but of honeybee plants. And one of the last nectar flow plants are the linden trees, the basswood tilia. And it really hastened their demise of the blossoms there. I mean, they're done. Sometimes they're still going in well into July, but not this year. Which reminds me, gentlemen, I brought some fresh honeycomb to sample. But it's very sticky, so we'll probably do that after we're done with the show.
Sure.
Yes. And we'll talk about what else we're harvesting, but I'm harvesting honey.
Great.
At this point.
Nice.
Anything else you want to say about the heat?
Well, I think one thing, just in terms of care of plants, it wasn't really in general. I mean, we experienced the plants were well watered, and water was not the solution. Really, if the plants are okay, I mean, they didn't. It was like you were talking about the burning of the leaves, just the absolute heat was just so hot that some plants are not really capable or used to dealing with that. In Schizandra or magnolia vine, which grows naturally in a more humid kind of forested environment on the east side of the Russian of Russia and in Korea, definitely was not happy with the sun so bright. And I think, listeners, they take that into consideration. It doesn't mean that the plant will never grow here or it's doomed to failure. It's just, if there are situations like this, I mean, we're going to be doing more recommendations for shade and more, experimenting too, like maybe for some plants having some artificial shade would benefit them, especially if this kind of weather continues. And I just heard about another heat dome that's building up somewhere. I can't remember where it is, but, our friends in Uzbekistan this year, I might have mentioned this before, they had a warm spell in early February that got the apricots into full bloom, and then they had extreme cold and killed all the flowers. And this is one of the main crops in that country. So, there's a lot of uncertainty right now, I think, about how the weather is going to play out and how it will affect gardening and fruit growing and stuff. So,
yeah, a lot of it is, well, wait and see.
Yeah. One thing I was encouraged about, like persimmons, which, you know, there's some plants that just naturally, I mean, they grow in hot climates anyway, and they're not bothered at all by it. Persimmon was one that I did really well.
Yeah,
no problem
good.
At all.
Good.
So,
well, yeah, my apples, plums, pears,
yeah,
cherries seem to do fine.
Yeah, yeah, so. And that's good. I mean, it was nice that we could have that happen, and like you said, we certainly hope that this will we won't have this happen again. But I think that's a wake up call, really, for. And hopefully there's people who are waking up.
The right people. You know? All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll move on here. We don't want to run out of time before we get to the rest of our items. But let us know if you've had any heat-related plants that are, you know, the surprising at thedirtbag@kbu.org. All right, Jim, you know what time it is?
I can guess.
That's right. It's time for the Garden Stumper. Good news for the garden. It's back to power. Well, Jim came up with this doozy of a garden stumper. So,
and you know, it's in some ways it's super simple.
Yeah.
But it's related to heat and temperature. So, and I thought a little bit about the background of this in America too, and I wanted just to make a couple comments. So, back in about 70 in the early 70s, we had a president named Jimmy Carter who was actually celebrating with his wife their 75th wedding anniversary. I mean, I was 2 years old when they got married.
Joe, were we alive then? No.
Pretty amazing, really. I mean, it's a pretty neat story. But anyway, Jimmy Carter.
Are you telling us you're 77?
Well, if you did the math, I guess you'd have to come up with that.
I didn't know you were
that
old.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Jimmy Carter.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
So bless his heart, he put solar panels on the White House. This was, you know, pretty much ahead of his time, you know, ahead of, you know, for doing these sort of solar energy was
right
in its infancy. And then guess what happens, you know, after he lost the next election, the next president, whose name I could mention, took them off. And that's a progressive thing to do, right?
Yeah.
You know, why bother with trying to produce electricity when you can just burn fossil fuel?
That's right.
So anyway, and in the same time, also what Jimmy Carter did was he started to initiate a program to convert America to the metric system, which was a good part of the rest of the world uses.
Good part?
Good, yeah.
I'd say about 98%.
Yeah, I think England doesn't use it, and maybe, you know, but anyway, so, and guess what happened with that? The same person who took the solar panels off the White House stopped that.
Put the kibosh on
that program. And so we still have this interesting method of measurement, which when it comes to temperature is called...
What is it called? The imperial system? Or?
No. Fahrenheit.
Well...
That's the measure. That's the unit that they...
Fahrenheit,
right? So we have degrees F. And... The rest of the world works with a different system called
Celsius.
Celsius.
Yes.
Right. And Celsius goes from zero, which is freezing, to 100, which is boiling. And Fahrenheit goes from 32, which is freezing, to 212, which is boiling.
Right. They actually go beyond that and below that.
Of course.
But those are the...
Those two moments in time.
Okay.
Right?
I hear you.
All right. So... That's a pretty big difference. But there is one point in the scale of Fahrenheit and Celsius where the temperatures are the same.
Yes.
And that is the garden stumper. What is that temperature?
Okay. If you know the answer to that, the first correct answer emailed to thedirtbag@kbu.org. We'll get a free sharpening of a hand tool at Coley Farm Store. Now, this could include pruners, loppers, shears, shovels, hose, hand tool,
fingernail.
I don't know if Ted would do that or not. Okay, so good one. All right, let's move on here quickly to what's harvesting. What are you harvesting?
Well, we are harvesting blueberries, currants, gooseberries, all a bit ahead of their time, really, the normal ripening time. We finished honeyberries, pretty much. We don't grow strawberries. Well, we did have some, and they're pretty much at the end. We have some peaches, early peaches that have come on. Pretty cool. I think I may have told you last time, and this at the next show I will tell you more. We will be partying soon because we have 5 apricots, a variety that we have in our block, and you can imagine those 5 apricots are being watched over.
Yeah, keep the deer away from them.
Boy, you better believe it, man. Machine guns, night lights. Anyway, 5 apricots. So.
All right.
They're not ripe yet. A fun thing for listeners to know about, if you really are determined to get a fully ripe apricot, and you jump in your electric car, if you have a long range one, drive east to Biggs Junction, take a left-hand turn, go across the Columbia River on Highway 97. On the other side is a fruit stand, and there's an apricot orchard there. And if you ask them for their number 2s, you will get fully ripe apricots at a discount. And it's like, it's a real treat. I mean, it's a beautiful drive, of course, up the Columbia, too. Yeah. So I encourage folks to try that. If you want to get a real ripe apricot, it's a way to do it.
Well, at my place and other places, actually, I don't grow lettuce anymore just because I don't. But, you know, lettuce and greens and all those things, and small or early beets and carrots could be harvesting. Peas, my peas, the heat just took care of those sugar pod peas, done with that. But the raspberries and the blackberries, some of the lower on the plant are still edible. Kind of normal things, but earlier than normal.
My neighbor who grows blueberries commercially is struggling a little bit because he's got good berries and bad berries on the plants, and he's faced with having to sort them out, and I don't know what other blueberry growers are dealing with, but it's definitely an effect of that hot weather.
Does he machine pick?
He does both, hand and machine.
The field where I take my bees to pollinate in April and May is all hand-picked now. It's 5 acres, but they're starting up next week. So we'll go out there and pick about 40 pounds in 40 minutes. It's pretty crazy. Yeah, it's just great picking.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a short break for our second musical selection here. This is from Casey Musgraves, and you probably never even heard of Casey Musgraves. She's kind of an Americana person, but she was, I think, is it the Grammys that are the recording thing? I think she won Best New Artist in 2018, Casey Musgraves. So she's got some chops. But anyway, this her song and her debut album's Golden Hour. It's called Slow Burn.
Texas is hot, I can be cold, grandma cried when
another musical selection from our burn theme today. Not for good reason. We were burning up last month. Onward with the dirtbag here. We'll get to our dirtbag dictionary term here just so we don't forget it. Sometimes we get to the end of the show and we're in a rush and we don't get to it. So Joe is going to take care of our dirtbag dictionary term, which was suggested by Jim, which is transpiration. Is that it, Joe?
That is it. That's transpiration or transpiration. When I first saw it, I thought iration at the end, and I thought that's something to do with sweating, which it does.
Ah, good.
You know, like perspiration.
Yes.
But it turns out it is the exhalation of water vapor through the stomata, which I have no idea what a stomata is, but I think it sounds like a plant sweating in a way.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's a pretty good definition. And that's, you know, the reason I suggested it was because it was connected to what has been happening with heat and what a plant has to do to stay alive. It has to transpire as it moves that water from the roots up through the leaves. And the when it's hot, it transpires more rapidly. And therefore, that's why you need to water more often when, you know, plants are growing vigorously and the weather is warm.
Now, what is it that happens when the leaves, like a few leaves on my fig, are just crispy? You know, they're dead. What happens there? What happened there?
That's a good question.
We need our botanist. What was his name here?
Matthew, I think.
Matthew. To write.
Help, Matthew. Right. I mean, things that happen to plants, you know, or, you know, it can be different causes.
Yeah.
You know, it.
Yeah.
So, it's.
I mean, does it just that the plant says that leaf is a goner? I'm cutting down my my transpiration here right now. No, I'm not going to waste any more water on that.
That could be.
Yeah,
it definitely could be. I mean, if the a lot of times a plant, we see this in potted plants a lot, where they're running out of water. And they will they'll shut down. The leaves will curl up. They'll drop leaves. Uh-huh. They're trying to survive. The fact that they don't have enough moisture to keep the leaves turgid and transpiring.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll get more information on that one too. And we'll also just take care of what's annoying me this month. It's nothing that I've experienced real recently, but it has annoyed me in the past. Where if you're having a particular problem with raccoons or squirrels or even opossums, and I'll come back to that because it is opossum. Maybe I've mentioned this before, but opossum is what we have here. But there is an animal in some other part of the world called a possum. So there's two different animals. So it's opossums that we have here. But anyway, if they live trap them, and even though they're a non-native animal, they will relocate them, quotes here, to a park or something. Oh, now my problem is your problem. So that annoys me. Yeah. I've mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again. I have a friend in Eugene who has a problem with these non-native squirrels in his garden too. And so he'll trap them in a, have a heart trap, and then he'll drown them. And speaking of problems, I now have a problem with rabbits. I mentioned that, didn't I? Yeah, they're nibbing my green beans. I've had to put fencing around the green beans, so now they're up to 2 feet or something. They're handling it. But.
Do you know where the rabbits live?
No.
No?
No. I'm going to... I've asked a friend if he could bring his dogs over there just to scare the bejeebies out of them. I don't want him to catch them. Well, yes, I do, but... That's kind of
well. We had our dog Wally is a really wonderful, sweet dog, but he's a Pyrenees, and there's a funny name for people use for Pyrenees is Disapyrenees, which he's prone to do, and so we rarely have him off a leash. However, my partner Lorraine was out walking with him. Came upon a deer inside our new deer fence, let him off the leash.
And, on purpose.
On purpose. And what transpired was remarkable. I mean, a dog, it's a pretty good sized dog, running full speed after a deer running full speed. And eventually the deer got away, of course, but
that would have been kind of
Lorraine regrets not having that on video.
Right. All right. Well, so we'll get over what's annoying me. But if you have that problem, don't do that. You know, euthanize it. All right.
Yeah. Well.
Okay. What do we have here? Let's see. Shall we talk about watering options?
Sure.
You know, during a if during restrictions. You know, now I don't know if Portland's going to have this, but I would say right away, let the lawn go dormant. You know, some people will say, well, it's going to, you know, I have brown lawn or a dead lawn. No, it's just going dormant.
Yeah.
It'll come back.
It will. Yeah.
You know, if and when we get rains.
What about if?
I'm covering my bases here.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to say it'll be green by September.
Yeah, no. Sometime
maybe October. I don't know. Maybe November.
Yeah,
that's the if part.
No, that's good advice.
Yeah. So conserve your water that way, and I'm very proud of our neighborhood. You know, very few people water their lawns.
You could let your car go unwashed for an extra day or two.
My vehicle has been unwashed now for going on 4 years. Well, I should probably get more water allotment for that.
You should. You should have some credits you can cash in, you know.
That's right. Bank that.
Yeah. Well, I washed a car recently because I wanted to sell it.
Oh.
Other than that, I don't wash the car either.
Well, you probably have well water.
We do.
Yeah.
But, you know, the well water can go low. And in 1977, when I was living up in the mountains at Hood River, where I started the nursery, in 77, we have a spring up there, a wonderful spring, but the most delicious water you could ever imagine. It dried up.
Uh-huh. That precipitate a move?
No, we had a tank on a truck, and we hauled water from the valley, and it was a big pain, and as you can imagine.
Didn't taste as good either.
No. But we did keep water, but then the spring came back in the winter. But that's the first time anything like that's ever happened to me. But when I think about watering, I mean, I think still the most important thing a person can do for a plant is mulch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Put something over the top of the soil so that what's dry is the surface of that, not the surface of the soil. You know?
It's remarkable having mulch. I planted a full bed of dahlias as a bee plant. I like dahlias too. And I'm also experimenting that I bought some, it's about 6-inch grid, real light, flimsy nylon material. You know, it's like netting, but the holes are 6 inches.
Hmm.
And I put that up about 3 feet. So when the stalks of the dahlias grow through it, they won't flop over. So I'm staking up this whole bed of, how many did I say it was? It was close to 100 dahlias at this bed. But anyway, I've mulched this bed with leaves for quite a few years and then planted through just took away the leaves and planted the dahlia in the soil. And so if I scrape away the leaves now that are, you know, have come back to where, filled in the hole, if you will, it's moist under there, even though it's baking on the top.
Yep. Yeah, it's remarkable how well that works. It just 3 or 4 inches of mulch makes all the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
So
keep that in mind.
It keeps weeds down too, which is also really important because if your plant is competing with grass or weeds for moisture, it's not going to win.
Yeah.
You know, your fruit tree, you've got a little fruit tree in your yard. It's not, you know, I just saw one the other day. It was just not a happy plant because it's got grass growing right up to its trunk.
Yeah.
You know? So the water that you're putting on is going to keep the grass nice and green, but not very much of it's going to get down to the roots of that tree.
Yeah. Well, another option, and it may become more legal, it is legal, if you will, is to use gray water. I do some gray water. I'll just leave it at that. I also take some of the dish water out just to water my Daphne, because it's not on any type of system.
Hmm.
So just using it, you know, get a second use out of that water.
Hmm.
Not edible.
Yeah.
So use it for that.
Yeah, water is pretty valuable, and without it, we would be sunk. I mean, or especially in Oregon, you know, we haven't really had significant rain here since early April.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, most farm crops would not survive without irrigation. And there's this huge controversy down south in the Klamath Falls
right.
area right now about, you know, farms versus fish. And
too much it's promised to
yep.
too many yep. organizations.
Yeah.
Okay. That is that. Then I guess our last topic to cover here in the last few minutes that we have here is summer pruning. I don't think you do too much summer pruning, do you, Jim?
Not really.
No. Of course, you're not doing too much pruning anyway. You're growing plants to, you know, small plants.
Yeah, most of our pruning on trees is done in the winter to produce shoots that we can use the following fall for buds.
Right.
So
we're in summer pruning and winter pruning. I mean, we're essentially trying to do the same thing, and that's to control the growth of the tree or to shape the growth of the tree to what we want. Oftentimes, when you're pruning in the winter time, which is the more typical time, you can do a major shaping of the tree. You know, well, what do you want? A vase shape, which is usually what we'd want for fruit trees, rather than a central leader, if you will, where just the main trunk comes up and then branches go off that. That's when you would be doing most of your training by doing winter pruning. With summer pruning, your tree is the shape that you want it. You just don't want it, and it's the size that you want, essentially. So we're just taking off the last year's growth. We're just pruning it back to where it was before. And the ideal time to do this is between July and mid-July to mid-August. You could start now; it's early enough. I have pruned some apple trees as late as October, and the danger there is that you might spur new growth, and which could be harmed before it has a chance to heal off. Disease may get in, but I haven't had that as a problem. It's just I'm too busy to do all the apple trees that I needed to do at that point. But my rule of thumb for doing summer pruning is that you don't want to cut off any branch that's larger than what you could do with hand pruners. So if you had a strong hand, you could take off a bigger branch in my, you know, somewhat flawed rule of thumb there. The time to take off, you know, big branches is during the when the plant is dormant or winter pruning. If one way to prune a cherry tree is to prune the fruiting branches off when you harvest. Get up on your ladder or don't get up on your ladder. You see a branch that has a lot of fruit, cut it off. You know, not just in the middle. I mean, you still want to practice good pruning hygiene. In other words, making a heading cut rather than a thinning cut, which is a thinning cut would be right in the middle of a branch. That's one summer pruning technique for cherries.
Are you saying remove the branch all the way back to the next large branch, or
mm-hmm.
yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, cherries, you know, there's no real good dwarfing cherries rootstock anyway. I mean, it's going to be pretty big,
mm-hmm.
and so one way to shorten it is to prune it during the summer with the fruit on it, so mm-hmm. it makes it easier to pick. And,
mm-hmm. and sure. And
so it's a lot more comfortable temperatures now, and your tree will not put out as much growth next year, too, by summer pruning. So don't skip a year, you know, thinking, well, I'm going to summer prune. So if you winter pruned or dormant pruned last year or this year, this January, and you're going to start summer pruning, do it this year. Don't wait a year and a half to prune it. So just a few of my words here, and we're less than a minute to go here. So
okay. I'd like to mention real quickly, pruners, just because I've today was thinking about it. I use pruners made by a company called, or they're called Bahco, B-A-H-C-O. And I've tried pruners for all the many years I've been doing this work, and they are, for me, the best.
So okay.
Reliable.
Bahco, I'm going to remember that one.
B-A-H-C-O. Yeah, really good ones.
And where are they made?
France.
Okay. Oh, that's where they prune the Anjou.
That's right.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks, Jim. It's been great to be here in person.
It's been fun.
Yeah. Joe, same to you, our ace engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll go out with our last burning-themed tune, and this the tune is called Backward Shack. The LP from Tony Monaco Trio is Burnin' Grooves. He's an organ player. So, thanks for listening. We'll be back in a month. Be well.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy miércoles 14 de julio del 2021. Varios gobiernos locales en China planean prohibir a los residentes que no han sido vacunados contra el COVID-19 el acceso a lugares públicos, lo que genera controversia a medida que el país impulsa la inmunidad colectiva. Muchos de ellos también establecieron fechas a fines de julio en la que las personas no vacunadas no podrían ingresar a escuelas, bibliotecas, prisiones, hogares de ancianos e instalaciones para pacientes hospitalizados en hospitales sin una exención médica válida. Algunas localidades atribuyeron sus nuevas políticas a arreglos nacionales, provinciales,